I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll look at the complex relationship between religion and liberty in the United States. Plans to build Philadelphia's second casino near Citizens Bank Park in South Philly are moving forward after a recent City Planning Commission meeting. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports that supporters of the $500 million casino hotel proposal are now refining details of the project to meet all of the city's requirements.
The current design doesn't have enough open space, city officials said, but the plan does call for a green roof of more than 2 acres. Planners thought maybe the rooftop vegetation would count toward the open space requirement, but it doesn't. Diana Kelly, a lifelong South Philly resident, says this is why she'd go to the casino.
To drink, to gamble, not to go to the open spaces. It's not, let's go have a picnic at the casino.
She's less than enthusiastic about a verdant roof.
I like flowers, they're pretty.
Another local, Anthony Tees, says no way, a green space on the roof would be awesome.
That's nice. I would really be up there. Like, who wouldn't want to be there, you know what I mean? You got a nice green area, like, put a pool up there too, we'd be there.
As this is being worked out, the Baltimore-based casino developer, the Cordish Company, is facing some taller hurdles, one of which is a fight against even opening the casino. Who's waging the battle? The operators of rival casino Sugar House in Fishtown. That clash, which is over the license of the proposed casino, is awaiting a state Supreme Court decision. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
A recent outbreak of MERS, or Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, in South Korea sickened more than 180, leading to 36 fatalities. WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports that some Philadelphia researchers are testing a new vaccine to prevent infection.
The vaccine is just a piece of DNA, a sequence designed on the computer to correspond to one of the spike proteins of the MERS virus. And in a small study of monkeys, it appears to work. University of Pennsylvania immunologist David Weiner says all 8 vaccinated animals were protected.
They were free of infection in just a few days, and most of them never showed any signs of infection.
Meanwhile, the 4 monkeys receiving control vaccines became very sick with pneumonia-like symptoms. Weiner says because the vaccine is just nucleic acid, it doesn't pose the same risk as traditional vaccines.
It's non-live, and it doesn't grow, and it can't spread.
To be effective, the DNA has to get into cells. That relies on technology developed by Inovio Pharmaceuticals, a biotech company based in Plymouth Meeting.
We use a delivery system that uses a small, short burst of electrical energy to coax open our cell membrane to allow our products to get into our cells.
President and CEO J. Joseph Kim says the company will begin a phase 1 clinical trial to test whether it's safe for people by the end of the year. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
Philadelphia launched a hotline this week for businesses to ask questions about plans for next month's papal visit. The effort has a bit of a publicity problem, as WHYY's Katie Culinary reports.
Parkside Beef and Ale on 15th and Arch Streets will be right in the so-called red zone, where security will be tightest when Pope Francis is in town. One of the bar's managers, Augusta Mason, lives in Northeast Philly, and she has no idea how she's going to get to work.
We're hoping that as the days draw nigh, we'll be able to have someone come out and let us know exactly what's going to happen and how we are to get in here. Even our suppliers are frustrated.
I asked if she called the city's new business resource center to get more information.
This is the first I've heard, and I heard you speak of it. No one has told us about that.
Down the street at Foods on First, manager Aldo Salazar says he hasn't heard of the center either.
No, not yet. Not yet. We haven't got any number where we can call and get more information.
Philly's Deputy Mayor Alan Greenberger says the city's still getting the word out on the hotline. So far, the Business Resource Center has gotten just over 140 calls.
Many of the questions we're able to answer on the spot with simply facts as they are out there right now in public. And then a number of the questions need follow-up.
For more information and the number to call, visit phila.gov. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Now, if you'd prefer to be far, far away when Pope Francis and a million of his friends come to town, our destination quiz can help you get out of town. You can find it and more special coverage at whyy.org/Pope in Philly. Pennsylvania cities are investing in their waterfronts, improving public access, and hoping economic benefits will follow. Though Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty reports that getting there is complicated.
Antonia Hinnenkamp and a few friends are about to start a bike ride. There's no humidity on this particular summer night, and Hinnenkamp says the setting is ideal, well worth the 20-minute trip from Lancaster.
I have a friend who comes every morning. She rides it every morning from Lancaster. She drives in. There's no cars. It's lovely.
Flat,
just pedestrians.
It's an old rail trail.
She's talking about the Northwest Lancaster County River Trail. Well, part of it. Her bike ride begins in Marietta, about half an hour from the state capital in Harrisburg. She'll turn around after 6.5 miles in Bainbridge. The trail ends there now, but will ultimately run 14 miles total along the Susquehanna River. In recent years, thousands of miles of pathways have been improved and created across the Commonwealth. I asked several people using this particular trail how long they thought it took to complete the project.
So how long would you guess that it took to get this thing off the ground and actually open the first significant section of trail?
Honestly, I don't know.
I would say, well, at least the effort to connect everything and make it one, probably about 6 years.
Probably 10 years or so.
20.
Oh, okay.
Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't really.
Why?
I don't know, because I think you have to get right away. Is there a natural right away? Did they have to buy a right away from the railroad? I mean, I know there's a rail line that goes next to it.
One thing is clear. When a waterfront is involved in development, it means more regulators, complexity, money, and time, even for low-impact projects. Here's Jay Sukernick, who heads the nonprofit River Life, talking about the Mon Wharf switchback ramp in Pittsburgh.
They tell people all the time it's like an alphabet soup of permitting.
There's the State Department of Environmental Protection, county and local agencies, the Coast Guard, and the ramp crosses a navigable water body, which typically brings in the Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps says permits can take as long as 5 years for development near its civil works projects. But in Pennsylvania, the DEP handles 85% of other permits on the Corps' behalf. Not all states do that, so it's one way Pennsylvania's process is relatively streamlined. Experts say the same is true of pollution cleanup standards. Here's Barry Hirsch, a real estate professor at NYU.
It allows more flexibility than some other states. Pennsylvania, very early on, 15 years ago, realized that redeveloping former industrial sites, many waterfronts, was particularly important to the state. They adopted brownfields legislation and modified it several times to try to make it more effective.
Same goes for one of the first steps in the permitting process, builders documenting how they'll handle threatened or endangered species living where they want to develop. Pennsylvania is ahead of many states there. Its natural diversity inventory makes information about what's living on a given property accessible online. The database costs $1.5 million a year to maintain, but the National Park Service says it saves months for these kinds of projects. Experts say Pennsylvania's wetlands regulations also expedite things. They aren't much different from other mid-Atlantic states, but rules tend to be stricter elsewhere. One complication in Pennsylvania is its high number of municipalities. There are 2,500 plus in the Commonwealth, more than any other state but Illinois. Here's David Yacht, who's been biking and hiking the trail since it was just a dirt path overgrown north of Marietta.
I can imagine there probably are some politics going on in the background, but I still think it's a better thing overall.
It's not just politics, but also coordination. The trail alone passes through 5 municipalities, each with its own public boards and elected officials that must sign off. It's worth noting these officials at all levels are being forced to collaborate in the interest of making the most of a river that doesn't recognize dividing lines between communities. Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station project. To see more in our Urban Waterfront series, including an interactive map, check out keystonecrossroads.org/waterfronts. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Republican lawmakers in Pennsylvania say they will meet a key demand of Governor Tom Wolf to boost public school aid, even if it requires a tax increase. In return, they're insisting on an end to the traditional pension benefit for future state government and public school employees. Republican legislative leaders made the offer today during a brief meeting with the Democratic governor in the Capitol. The environmental group Clean Water Action gives the New Jersey legislature a failing grade when it comes to protecting the state's natural resources. The group released a report today tallying how lawmakers voted over the past 2 years on more than a dozen bills considered environmentally significant. The Democratic-led legislature scored an average of 47%. The bills used to calculate the score included a measure allowing development permits to be extended and legislation that permits municipalities to privatize public water systems without getting voter approval. The general manager of Philadelphia's transit system is retiring just days after Pope Francis comes to town. SEPTA's Joseph Casey announced his decision today, his last day in charge of the nation's sixth largest public transportation system will be September 30th. Casey has been with SEPTA for 34 years, the last eight as general manager. 85 degrees, partly cloudy skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast includes the chance of showers, otherwise cloudy, low 76 degrees. Tomorrow, overcast with a 50% chance of precipitation, high 87. Count on rain heavy at times Friday morning, thunderstorms possible as well, humid, high 82. To the weekend, Saturday, partly sunny, high in the low 80s, and then clouding up Sunday with a 50% chance of rain, high 86. It's 6:18. This is WHYY. Still ahead this evening, crime takes a nosedive in a Kennett Square neighborhood after community members invite police officers to stop by.
Instead of us having to be down there because we were needed, we were down there because we wanted to have a positive police presence.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY is Philabundance, providing hunger relief to residents of Pennsylvania and New Jersey since 1984. More than 1 million people in our area face hunger. More information on helping to feed our neighbors in need is available at philabundance.org.
Getting double of something is great. Giving double of something is even better. Many companies in our region match charitable contributions made by their employees. Find out if you can double your gift to WHYY by visiting whyy.org/matching.
WHYY volunteers help with everything from membership campaigns to exciting events to day-to-day tasks, and their valuable time and effort keeps costs down and maximizes the generous financial support of our members. If you or your group or business is interested in volunteering, please visit whyy.org/volunteer and enter your information. Groups that answer phones during membership campaigns even receive on-air recognition. Public media would not be possible without people like you. whyy.org/volunteer. Thank you.
In the land of drought, those with the water are kings.
They control our destiny here. They really do. And they could dry this town up.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Farms in the desert in the middle of a drought. What could possibly go wrong? We'll have that and the rest of the day's business news as well next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Tonight at 6:30 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A black community, a mostly white police force. Based on recent headlines, you might think this story's headed for trouble. But the residents of East Linden Street, just blocks off the main drag in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, forged a different relationship with the town's officers to pull off a remarkable transformation, as WHYY's Laura Benshoff reports.
Teresa Bass sits on the steps outside of the Bethel AME Church on East Linden, surveying the small street where she spent most of her life.
My mom, she still lives in the same house, 323 East Linden, so I moved like three houses down, 331 East Linden.
At 59, Bass wears her hair in short, wispy curls that ring her head like a halo. She says growing up on an out-of-the-way street in a small town was idyllic, but as the local economy sputtered during the 1980s, she says the neighborhood changed.
I come home, I was on second shift at the time. I come home at 11:30, and I could barely get in on the sidewalk to get in my house because you got guys standing there or, you know, stopping traffic to do what they're doing, things in the wind. It's like, it was sort of like a city, you know?
Mention Kennett Square to most people in our region, and mushroom farms more often come to mind than open-air drug markets. But contrary to popular image, Kennett Square Borough itself is compact and densely settled, a single square mile that shares a name with the more affluent surrounding township. By the 1980s, East Linden Street had gotten the reputation as a place in Kennett Square where nobody cared what you did.
Most of the homes were all African-American, live here. You know, you had a whole lot of people, and I was feeling that the town really didn't care as long as it didn't go over there, you know, outside this one district here.
Men loitered, drinking and selling drugs. Bass says her brother Avery battled drug and alcohol addiction as well. By 2002, she said she was ready to leave.
I was done. I was like, I'm getting out of here. And my friend Joan Holiday, well, she's a nurse. She said, okay, there's a problem. She said, but what are you going to do about it?
She says she prayed for an answer. In the end, she and Holiday decided to hold monthly meetings with residents.
The first time, nobody showed up, maybe five people. But the next time, it must have been maybe 50.
Around the same time as those first meetings, Kennett Square received money from former Governor Ed Rendell's administration, called Elm Street money, aimed at revitalizing its historic core, including East Linden Street, which has roots back to the Underground Railroad. Some of that money went to homeowners who could use it to fix up their facades. While the meetings and the money helped kickstart the turnaround, residents in East Linden really wanted help tackling the neighborhood's drug problem. That meant getting police to be a part of the community, not just dashing in and out when something went wrong.
Instead of us having to be down there because we were needed, we were down there because we wanted to have a positive police presence.
Officer Sarah Capaccio has worked in the Kennett Square Police Force for 6 years. Growing up in the borough, she'd heard about East Linden.
It was always the rumors, like, you don't go down East Linden Street. Like, don't drive down that street. Like, that's the one street down in Kennett that you don't drive down.
She says she doesn't hear that anymore. Thanks to Bass, the meetings, and a community organization Bass helped start called Carter CDC, the police now walk regular patrols through the area. And they take the time to get to know neighborhood kids.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Blue.
What's your favorite color?
Pink.
Activities like this one during National Night Out, an annual celebration of community and law enforcement, now act as a way to reinforce those relationships.
I remember you from the other day with Officer Manko.
What?
You told Officer Manko you like pink.
This year, the kids made a game out of meeting police officers on the force and finding out what they had in common. Bass says that's a far cry from how she felt growing up.
I was scared of police when I was little. Yeah, I was. And then again, you know, you being African-American and they're being white, you were scared.
Since Carter CDC incorporated in 2007, police data show that disorderly conduct citations dropped sharply. There were only 3 in 2013, down from a peak of 53. Bass says these changes mean the neighborhood is now attracting a different class of home buyer.
We have people pretty well off moving here, you know, and, you know, they're really nice neighbors, and they have money, they can put money in.
That money, she says, has started to drive up home values and in turn property taxes. For old-timers like her, getting priced out of the neighborhood is now a bigger concern than crime. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benchoff.
Despite extraordinary security measures around Philadelphia's Independence Mall for the visit by the Pope, two museums will stay open during the weekend of September 25th, the National Museum of American Jewish History and the National Constitution Center. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the Constitution Center will feature an exhibition explaining the creation of religious liberty.
Did our founding fathers base the new nation on religious ideals? According to historical documents assembled at the National Constitution Center, the answer is yes and no. It's complicated. 9 of the 13 colonies restricted voting, military service, and sometimes even property ownership to people of a particular religion. In Pennsylvania, the charter was slightly more liberal, allowing followers of any religion to participate in political life as long as they at least believed in Jesus Christ. So when James Madison came up with the radical idea that people have the right to worship according to, quote, the dictates of conscience, that rubbed states the wrong way.
Just a profound tension between this tradition of colonial established churches and this new belief, this radical belief, you're absolutely right to call it a radical belief, coming from the Enlightenment, that the right to worship God, according to the dictates of conscience, is an unalienable individual right, and that's completely inconsistent with the idea of established churches.
Rosen says the notion of an established religion took a long time to shake off. He points to early drafts of the First Amendment, which shows the Senate trying to weaken the language of religious liberty.
The Senate is still trying to hedge its bets when it's drafting the Establishment Clause and says, Congress shall make no law establishing articles of faith or a mode of worship. It doesn't actually want to ban a federal establishment, but the House wants to unequivocally say you cannot have a federal established church.
The Religious Liberty exhibit will be open until January. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, if you're tired of hearing doomsday traffic predictions surrounding the Pope's visit next month, and you need a reason to get excited, well, here it is. Beer. Some local breweries are producing their own papal-inspired libations in anticipation of Pope Francis's arrival. The Manayunk Brewery Company recently made its ale, Papal Pleasure, using Malbec wine barrels and South American sugar in honor of the Argentinian-born pontiff. Brewer Evan Fritz says they even had the brew blessed by a local Catholic priest.
The priest came in and blessed the entire tank, so all of the brewing water that we used to clean the tank and to make the beer with was all blessed. He put his hand on it and read this whole little thing, and we all took some pictures and just chatted and gave him some beer to take back with him.
Other Pontiff-based potables include the Philadelphia Brewing Company's Belgian-style triple called Holy Water and the Cape May Brewing Company's pale ale, You Only Pope Once. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas with help today from Brett Rader. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's CARON.org.
Larry Wilmore has had to deal with some tragic stories since his satirical news program, The Nightly Show, premiered in January. He recently marked the one-year anniversary of Ferguson.
I mean, it's crazy how time flies when you're in a constant panic about getting shot by the cops.
Larry Wilmore talks about finding his voice on the next Fresh Air.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.